Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello, it's us again, and I am immediately going to offer Maggie my huge and heartfelt apologies because I am terribly late. You, dear listener, don't know, but Maggie's had to wait for me for half an hour. And so I've come full of and a real need to tell a story just because I feel like everything that's happened on the way here has been an omen for something that maybe needs speaking.
Go ahead. And I didn't mind at all. I had other things to do. It always works out perfectly.
It's true.
But that in this moment, I don't care enough about you to care that you're late.
I know that's not true. But also, I'm very glad that you weren't tapping your fingers and worrying about me being late. But in a way, it speaks to kind of why you and I are friends and why I want to talk about what I want to talk about. Mm. You don't mind that I'm late because you're, well, kind, generous, patient, calm person who's not just going to be thinking, you know, you're wasting my time. Come on, blah, 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 blah. You've got no big stories about the importance of having your own way and having it now, which is exactly what I saw today. That's why I'm late. Because on the road, we're a bunch of people who want their own way and they want it now.
Yeah.
And so I had to reverse a very long way and, as you know, broke my wing mirror doing it.
Oh, I have to do for that someone, so often at the moment.
Oh, me too. For someone who was no more than 30 yards from a passing point, but but kind of okay because he was going uphill, so I was reversing up the hill and reversing down the hill is, you know, horrible and scary. So that was kind of fair enough. And I was cross with myself that I'd knocked my own wing mirror off in doing it. Or no, I hadn't knocked it off and not the back off. But it was sort of vaguely fair enough. But then, so that would have made me 5 minutes late. Mm-hmm. Then on the one and only piece of road between your house and my house, where two cars can't easily pass, there is a very clear sign. So it's up a hill between two buildings.
Oh, I know exactly where I mean. Oh,
so there is a very clear sign, is there not, that says at the top of the hill that you have to give way to people coming up the hill.
Yes.
And so what was coming up the hill was a massive Thompson's lorry. Mm-hmm. If you live around here, you'll immediately know what I mean by a massive Thompson's lorry. And if you don't, so it's about the size of a medium to large mobile home. Mm. And it takes up, if you're on a narrow road, it takes up all of the road. Yeah. So where you don't have clearly two sides to the road, there is not a chance that you're going to get past the Thompson's lorry. You just have to wait.
Yes.
Now, the Thompson's lorry was in the front of the massive queue of traffic that I was in. And when we finally did, after easily 20 minutes, maybe 25, of just sitting there, when we finally did drive past what had been obstructing the aforementioned Thompson's lorry, it turned out to be what I can only assume was a holidaymaker, bless them, but somebody, just a person in a car, but who had been so determined to get down that hill because I'm going this way and therefore, therefore I can and I will kind of thing, that they hadn't pulled over for the lorry. And so they, and by the time I moved past them, probably a mile of cars, had to stop because there's no way, had to back up, which meant all the cars behind her had to back up, which meant people had to back into a field gate and just yada, 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 yada. 20 minutes worth of probably, you know, one of the worst 20 minutes of her holiday, I reckon. She was a holiday maker. All because when confronted with a narrow road and a massive lorry, no part of her could conceive of not being able to just carry on because I want to, go through because it's my right of way or something, which in fact it isn't her right of way.
So you're saying entitlement, really?
I am massively talking about entitlement. I really am. Yeah. And it's, maybe I'm making a mountain out of a molehill, but I feel like these are the last two button pressings from my perspective of looking around and just seeing so much entitlement. And maybe our sense of entitlement is the most dangerous thing we have right now.
Definitely, I think it's the most dangerous thing. And it all comes from the me culture that we have now. I've been talking about this in Kabul. I've been doing videos on YouTube. I'm a very brave woman.
You are.
About how we, and this is melding Kabul with Richard Rohr, but basically we start off with our story, which is the family, the tribe that we're in, because we aren't individuals when we're absolutely tiny. The tantrums of the two-year-old are trying to be an individual, pushing against a system, first time they learn to push against, I guess. But and then we, as we grow up, probably teenagers, we become me, I. Mm. Oh, I'm important. I have a voice. I have something to say here. I have rights. And the journey of the human being is to get beyond that, to find out who you really are. This is the whole story of Exodus. To come to the greater we, which is the greater story. And I'm still exploring that, having learned so much from you and having realised, like, that I was trained in Kabbalah as pertaining to humanity only, not as into ecology. So, you know, it's fascinating looking at this from a wider thing. But the big picture, you can only get to that loving of the thou if you're in a good relationship with the what, the I. And when you're entitlement, you're not in good relationship with the I. You're it's about me. It's not about the bigger picture or even the compassion.
No. Or, yeah, anything, yeah. I mean, you've gone straight there to exactly where I wanted this conversation to go. That absolutely, our sense of entitlement is so based on our, some kind of inculcated idea that humanity is the only thing that really matters. And that within humanity, I matter and I must be allowed to do what I want to do in any given moment. And so, you know, perhaps it's a stupid example that
I just love stupid examples. They're usually the best example because they bring up the emotions and you realise that the emotion on a, quote, stupid example is way bigger than you'd think it should be. Yeah. So there's an underlying deeper thing.
Yeah,
it's a
definitely
lovely thing. Danan Parry, who wrote a book called Warriors of the Heart, about he's part of the Earth, he was founded the Earth Stewards Network or something, which was about this wider picture. And he always said, the presenting problem is never the real problem.
No, absolutely. The presenting problems, they're usually the straw that breaks the camel's
exactly back. But you've got to rant about the straw and then take your time going back. And I've got exactly the same thing from a different point of view, in that I have a very dear friend who went through a very serious emotional crisis for a year, and I supported her as much as I could. And in her dealing with it, there were aspects of her that were incomprehensible to me. They didn't make me cross. They didn't make me angry. I couldn't get them. So I became afraid that I would put my foot in it, because I didn't understand where she was coming from, and she was quite resistant to people putting different points of view, I ended sort of closing myself back down as a sort of effort of trying to be kind, and I got it wrong. And now, and then I needed space for me to get back to my own smell, to quote Piglet. You know, to get my own smell back here. And now I think she's quite upset with me because she thinks I don't love her anymore, and I've abandoned her and walked away. And it's a bit of me sort of going, can I just still have a little bit more time for me, please? Because I haven't processed this. And yes, I'm a weak and feeble and possibly stupid woman, in that I need time to process this because I couldn't necessarily handle you. And now, of course, I'm feeling, oh God, I'm being chased and hiding in a corner. So that's my crap that I'm bringing to the table today. But it's an indication of something much deeper, which is, in my case, I think I definitely never was allowed to be entitled. So it really pisses me off when people are. And that's projection, of course. And it also takes me deeper into this idea of entitlement, because Oh, let me see if I can put this in words. Can you yabber for a bit? Because I've got to think about
it. Oh, blimey. No, I've been so in that place of, oh, I think I vaguely know what I mean. Well, I know. I'm reasonably confident I know what I mean. But summoning it into language has been eluding me for the past few days.
Yes.
But no, I'm really clear about what I mean here. That our sense of entitlement, this report out by, I mean, I really ought to know who it is, but the report that's out that I...
About climate?
Yeah, shamefully. I want to call it the IPCC report, but I don't think that's it. Just proves beyond a shadow of a doubt how basically our sense of entitlement, so our this idea that we can have what we want, when we want, and how we want it, is so completely in contravention of or opposition to what's remotely sane. Yeah. Especially when you examine it in the light of, I believe it to be the case that half of all global emissions have been made since that guy who was deputy president in America made
Al Gore.
A film. Since Al Gore made that film, we've released the same again. By way of emissions. So what's that, 35 years or something?
Yeah.
30 years?
Not even that, I don't think.
How stupid are we?
We don't care.
Yeah, maybe we don't. I care. You care. But maybe as a species, we just don't care.
No.
But that lack of care to me comes from the inculcated belief that we are entitled to have what we have.
Yes. Yes. When people... this is going to be fairly controversial. When people are spouting on about freedom, you're taking away my freedom. It's usually you're taking away my entitlement.
Mm.
Because we don't have that many rights. We think we have rights. We go on about all the rights we have. And I'm an extremely privileged white woman. I know that.
Mm.
But I know that I don't even have the right to drink the water on this planet without the grace of the Holy Mother.
Yeah.
It's not my right. It's a privilege.
Yes. It's your gift from her.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. That is fundamentally the bottom line.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It is not my right that the government gave me a grant during COVID-19 because my income went down. It was a privilege.
Mm. Yeah, that you live in a country that's rich enough to be able to do
that. Yeah, and I personally think the government is a pile of shit, but I voted for the other guys. I take what's there. They don't know what they're doing, but I don't know what I'm doing. If I were in charge of the country now, I would be screwing up too.
Mm.
Hopefully I wouldn't be screwing up quite so majorly and I'd be screwing up in different directions.
At least you'd be trying to tell the truth. let's not get derailed by that. But oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, something that brings me back to something you can sometimes only try to tell the truth because sometimes the other won't hear it.
Oh, totally. And also, you know, define the truth.
Yeah, exactly. What is the truth? The perennial truth is a very different thing from today's truth.
And truth is potentially, probably entirely subjective.
Yeah.
And a kind of ever-changing personal set of beliefs in a way.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that there is. I think there are ultimate truths, but I don't think there's that many of them. And the rest of what we consider to be truth is utterly subjective.
Yeah. It's hopefully a perennial truth that so the system works the way it does.
Yeah.
In a purely mathematical way. It's a perennial truth that humanity is evolving. It may not look like it, but it is. And it's becoming a perennial truth that we don't really care about the planet.
I'm not sure that that is a perennial truth.
I hope no. I think you're right. It's one of those things I said and then I think, well, what did you say that for? It's becoming a rather powerful truth, not a perennial one.
I don't even think it's a truth. I think we do care about the planet. I think in many ways you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who genuinely doesn't care about it.
Mm.
I just think that we have our from just things like this sense of entitlement in, with which we are raised. It is the sea in which we swim, you know, as just if you're in Britain or America, typically, I mean, I absolutely fully realise there are plenty of people in both of those places who are not, you know, haven't got all their basic needs met. But I would reckon that the majority do. Sadly, a smaller majority than used to, as far as I understand it. But anyway, that when you have your basic needs met, there is something about that sense of entitlement. I'm not sure I can explain this really well, but that if your basic needs are being met, it goes against your capacity to continue like that, to care enough to change, is to take a risk that your basic needs would no longer be met.
Yes.
And I think that's why, for example, again, this is probably a stupid example and it's totally tip of the iceberg stuff, but for me, that's why people won't buy organic food. You know, organic tomatoes might cost 30p more than non-organic tomatoes.
Mm.
And they won't buy them because at some kind of unthought out core level, they're afraid that if I buy the expensive tomatoes, I won't have enough money for other things that I need that aren't tomatoes, even when that's not true.
Yes.
And that the meeting of our core needs, of our core kind of, well, of the things we perceive to be our core needs, which are likely different from our real core needs, they make us, the meeting of them in some ways makes us very vulnerable to sticking our heads up our own bums in a way and just going, oh no, can't see a way out, because where I am is comfortable and perceived to be safe.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to throw a very silly spanner in the works there and say the only trouble with organic tomatoes is they're always coming in plastic to distinguish them from the others.
I don't know. I don't eat tomatoes, so that would be...
No, it's fine at the lovely organic shop in Okehampton, and whenever that's open. But if I'm careless enough to have to go shopping when they're shut and I want organic tomatoes, I probably won't buy organic tomatoes because I can only get them from the supermarket and they'll be in plastic. So I'll buy... Oh, never mind.
So frustrating.
It is frustrating, isn't it? It is.
But just to be a bit of a dog with a, sock in our house, won't give them up. Personally, if it was me, I wouldn't buy a tomato at all.
Yeah. Because you're quite right.
Yeah, I'm not buying an organic one if there is one, but I'm also absolutely not buying one in plastic.
Yeah.
And so I will go home without a tomato.
Yeah.
But I fully realise that I'm probably further away from what's culturally acceptable or normal than most people.
Yeah. I think the more entitled you get, the less happiness you have.
Why?
Because of my experience, and I'm also quoting Richard Rohr again here, he's got more experience of people than I have. He's been down at the wall at Mexico and working as a chaplain in a prison, whereas I've only worked as a chaplain in a hospice. Those who have pretty much nothing have to find happiness somewhere without buying something.
Mm-hmm.
The people I met in the far reaches of China who had nothing were much happier than the people I met in Hong Kong, for example. And I'm much happier with less than I was with all the money in the world working in TV.
Okay. I want to contest that. I don't think people are happy with or without more or less stuff. I think they're happy with or without more or less expectations and desires.
Yeah, and that goes right round to Buddhism and attachment being suffering. Yes, attachment.
But also if you're if your life is such that there absolutely is no expectation whatsoever that you're going to have for some reason we're on this as stuff, but it certainly works as stuff, as, you know, I don't know, a pair of shoes at all. Mm. Never mind a pair of Gucci or whoever makes shoes. But see,
this is what we got to define expectation. Expectancy or expectation? Because if you're hoping for a pair of shoes, then that's very different from I have to have Nike.
Yeah, totally. But my point is that people with little and little expectation of having stuff, it's, to me, it's not the little that makes the difference. It's the little expectation.
Yes.
So as somebody who has spent swathes of her life with no expectation of being able to afford anything whatsoever other than to keep the roof over my head and food in my children's bellies, I swiftly learned not to want. And if you don't want anything other than what you have, you are happy.
Yes.
So if you have no expectations, which utter abject poverty tends to give you no expectations, you are so much more likely to be happy than someone who has expectations.
That was exactly what I was trying to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's not because they have nothing that they're happy. It's because they don't have expectations that they're happy.
Yes.
I'm sure they could be significantly happier with somewhere safe to live and food in their belly, as long as they continued not having expectations.
Yes, it's the expectations. But the expectations probably fueled by entitlement.
Are fueled by entitlement. Probably.
Not for those who have nothing, absolutely not. But in our modern world, our expectations are fueled by entitlement. This is going to make me better. This is going to make me happier. This is going to make me this. All the lies of marketing.
Well, exactly. I mean, that whole thing of consumer society, that's the definition of our society. I think it's misleading to say that we live in the West or in a Western society. What we specifically live in is a consumerist society.
Yeah.
And our whole worldview is filtered through consumerism, which is why we don't turn the electric off or put on another jumper or not go to Corfu or whatever it is. Because we've been sold this idea that that's necessary or in some way. I don't really know. Because it doesn't get to me. I don't really know why it is people do it. And if you're listening to this and you're really clear on why it's okay for you to get on an aeroplane or why it's okay for you to turn on oil central heating rather than putting another jumper on, I'd really love to know why you think that's okay.
Yeah. For some reason, I have to tell a particular story here, and it will probably turn out to be relevant, but I don't know why. But it's something that happened to me years and years ago, and I didn't even recognise until about 10 years ago how kind somebody was to me when I thought they were a dickhead. And I don't know why it's relevant. I just know that it is. I had a job when I was a young reporter. I got a job at the Evening Mail, and I was there too soon. I was too young, and the man who ruled the office was a groper.
Oh God!
And I didn't have the guts to say F off, or I was too young, all that 21. And so I left the job in some despair and grief with colitis, and I went to work for the Midlands Electricity Board, which were as a public relations officer, which was humiliating because everybody in journalism despised PR people or press officers. But it was the only job I could get, and I needed to pay the rent. During that time, I was there for a year, and I got my courage up, and I went back to another newspaper and made a better success of it because I was a bit older than wiser. During that year, I met incredible kindness from the person that all the journalists totally despised, who was the head of PR there. His name was Bob Clark, and I don't think you're still alive, Bob, but to your soul, I say I'm sorry that I ever thought you were a dickhead because you were so kind. What happened was, I should have known better. Of course, you can say that. I was a reporter.
Hmm.
But I was always an extra kind reporter. I was never a tough reporter, which is why I was never a very good reporter. Anyway, I had a lunch with a journalist from the Sunday Mercury, and I was chatting to him off the record. Favourite term, off the record. And I told him some stuff about what was going on at the MEB, and he made it the front page lead that Sunday.
Bastard.
And in this modern world, I would have lost my job immediately. Mm. Probably in those days, I would have lost my job immediately. I certainly got called into Bob. I was utterly humiliated because I knew I shouldn't have said these things anyway. But I had trusted him. And Bob said, "You were honest, Maggie. How could I ever punish somebody for telling the truth?"
Wow, good man. And you don't find many of those in the media, I imagine.
No, did I appreciate it? No. Not really. I was, you know, hugely relieved and hid in shame for quite some time and all that. But I don't know why that was relevant. But I think it was something about he confounded my expectations. You know, he was just, why was that relevant? I have no idea. But I don't know.
But I tell you what, though, that kind of truth telling, just straight up, how can I tell you off for telling the truth?
Yeah.
Even though so much of our entire industry is predicated upon not telling the truth, or
including the MEB, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all a big lie. It's all a big lie.
Yes.
The whole of consumer culture is a big lie. You know, we say it every week, don't we, that we live in a post-truth world, but there is so much untruth. And I bet you that there are people listening to this now.
We have a beagle who's chasing a flea.
I'd be prepared to bet you that there are people listening who are going, oh, well, why shouldn't I get on an aeroplane or what was the other one? Turn on the heating.
I'm perfectly willing to say I'll probably justify going on an aeroplane at some point soon too.
Okay, well, yeah. Specifically, there will be some people who are going, it's all a lie. Even climate warming is a lie, and that, you know, we're just being sold. I can't remember how it goes, but the Green New Deal is a con, and it's just another way of making us buy more stuff, and climate change isn't real and blah, 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 blah. And I don't fucking know. I'm not a scientist. Yeah. I don't know.
Yes.
But what I absolutely do know is that there is horrendous inequality in this world.
Yes.
Horrific. And that the way we live now isn't fair to other humans, to other creatures, to other species. Mm. And that whether it's causing global warming or not, cutting down the blocking Amazon.
Yes, I know.
Not okay.
No.
I don't care whether, you know, whether we're really heating or entering another ice age, or I just don't give a rat's ass. I'm sorry, but destroying the habitat and the bodies of so many for so little is not okay.
No, it's not okay. And I got a bit antsy with people when the first electric cars came out, because it was, oh, look at us. A little bit of virtue signalling here and there, I think. You know, but the nickel and the cadmium or something that's mined. And I think there was a yoghurt that I found that I thought was Greek, and apparently it's Greek cows, and the milk's sent to Germany, and then it goes to Britain to be processed, and then it's sent back to Greek, and then it's sold as Greek yoghurt or something. And you just sort of go, what the actual... And what can we do? We can definitely do our little bit. But this comes back to significance, in that if you have a clear one-to-one, I-thou relationship with God, Goddess, the Holy One, whatever you call it, the source of all, if you are open and willing to be in communication with the bigger story... Oh, God, I've lost my train of thought now.
Okay, well, in that case, I just want to butt in with what can you do? Is what you can do, you, anybody, all of us, is stop trading convenience and cost at the expense of the lives of the rest of the planet. Mm. So you specifically have the opportunity to buy yogurt down the road from your house that came from cows who also live down the road from your house in a glass jar, and the cows get to keep their calves.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yes.
Not everyone can do that.
Yeah.
But I challenge every single person listening to find local sources of good ethical food, because the more we want to buy it, the more people are able to produce it. And farmers can't make good ethical food if there is no market for it.
Yeah.
And yes, maybe it will be a little more expensive, but as we have discussed before, at what cost?
Costing the earth. Yeah.
It's going to cost the earth
to
carry on with plastic yogurt that's been across the planet twice before you get to put it in your fridge.
I remembered what the significant thing was. If you have that relationship with the greater good, or whatever you want to call it, you know you're significant.
Yes.
You know that this is a relationship. I mean, the true mystics are one with the Holy One. That's why Jesus said, I and the Father are one. And he only said Father because he was in a patriarchal system. If he said Mother, people would have laughed him out of the court. But if you got that significance, you don't need significance elsewhere. You don't need the Jean-Paul Gaultier handbag or whatever it is, or the... You don't need half as much because you've got that significance. And the ego requires stuff to give it significance. It requires certain people to like you to give you significance. It requires things to be sorted in the way that suits you to give you significance. And you have to have your tribe agreeing with your significance. And we are projecting that everywhere, in that everything gives us significance, including buying expensive food or something gives us significance, wearing a designer label gives us significance. And I think that's still an aspect of the entitlement, which is the I am seeking to be significant from an external source.
Okay.
Not sure that's relevant either, but
no, I'm just back with the buying expensive food gives me significance, because I always go round and round and round in these circles of how do I reach the hearts and the actions? How can that heart then filter out into action of people who listen to the things I say and go, You're a fucking entitled middle class witch who gets to go and buy yogurt that costs whatever it costs instead of the one from Sainsbury's or other supermarkets.
May also apply
that costs whatever it costs. And that there, I understand that, you know, yes, there are people who go to who shop in Waitrose, for example, which I understand that shopping in Waitrose is a marker for having more money than for people who shop elsewhere.
I shop in Waitrose.
Do you, darling?
Shopped in Waitrose when I was seriously broke because it was a way of telling me that I mattered.
So you just proved your own point.
Absolutely. But I bought less and I bought good quality. And actually, do you want to finish because I interrupted you?
Well, no, I mean, less than good quality is one of the ways of explaining it, isn't it, is that there's a whole, I think it's a like a hashtag thing now that says, you know, buy less, buy better. Because if you buy less and better, you are probably maiming the planet less.
Yeah.
But that where's the way in to make somebody who has, you know, hardly enough money to put food on the table understand that the world will only ever be what it is if they carry on buying, I don't know, yogurt that costs 50p.
Costs the earth, yeah.
But costs the earth,
yeah.
But comes in plastic, has air miles attached, is created from cows who are living indoors, suffering horribly, are
eating corn, therefore not even giving us omega-3 in our meat if we eat them, which is what we need from meat. That's one of the reasons why people eat meat. Anyway, go on.
Well, and also, actually, if you really want to get into the disgusting details, half of what they're eating is probably cow pus, not even cow milk, because they're treated so badly that they're full of mastitis.
Yeah.
And, you know, yada, 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 yada. How do we, I, anyone, reach the heart of that person and make them understand that even the choice to buy that yogurt is co-creating the world in which we live.
Yes. And every choice matters. You are not too small. And if you know, have that relationship with the Holy One, you know you're not too small. You know that with every action, you change universes.
Totally. It's one of my favourite sayings, is that anyone that believes they are in, that something small is insignificant has never spent a night in a room with a mosquito.
Yes, I love that. Yes, my late husband's brother, he had huge problems. He was transgender in the era when nobody knew what that meant. And I wasn't, I was polite to him and kind of, but I didn't understand him. I know that. And I'm sorry about that. But he was also a dickhead, because you can be gay, straight, whatever, and still be a dickhead. You still can. In that he was really, really... he was always saying he was absolutely broke, though he lived in a house with no rent and things like that, and he did have work. And he felt broke, so therefore he was broke, mm-hmm. end of. But there was a point in my life when I went from being staff at the BBC to being contract at the BBC. Now, everybody's going to go, well, that's entitled, but yes, it was. But I had a car loan with the BBC at the time, and they pulled it in, which meant I wasn't paid for a year. I had to work and pay a mortgage for a year with no income.
Wow, how come?
I owed them a certain amount of money, but because I wasn't a staff member anymore, the loan came from the BBC and it was pulled in.
Right.
Which meant that they took all my wages. So I actually lived without wages for a year. And I did it by buying a chicken or some sardines and eating every bloody bit. From end to end. I sold all my jewellery. I sold half of my possessions. This was before eBay. Mm. I'm not trying to do virtue signalling here. I'm just trying to say it was possible. Mm. And my friends helped me. Pete, on the other hand, when, this is the brother-in-law, when he lost his job, was still putting packet meals in the microwave. And he was buying a ready meal every, I don't have time to make meals. And yes, I know there are many people, and the whole system is so screwed. You know, we put all parts of the family have to go out to work. There isn't time to do the cooking. They're too tired at the weekend to do batch cooking. It is the system that's screwed.
Yeah. But the system will not change.
Until we do. And Pete was an environmentalist years ago. I remember telling him about the body shop and how thrilled I was that the body shop had opened because it was a move. And all he said was they're still using plastic, which he was probably absolutely right about. But he was fervently environmental and still shoving his ready meals in the microwave.
Bizarre. And I guess we all have our blind spots.
That's actually, I think, exactly the point. We all have blind spots, and I have blind spots. And I do know that I will get on a plane to go to Cyprus to see my son.
To me, that's different. When you're going to see your son, fine, you know. I don't think the goddess and all of the universe would be going, fucking selfish Maggie, going to see her son. You're going because love calls you to be with somebody who really, really, really matters.
Thank you. And
if you were going to lounge about on a beach, I'd be going...
I will do some lounging about
on
the beach.
Yes, I know, but that's not why you're going. No. I don't know. I realise I'm horribly judgmental.
But it's good to talk it out. I love these conversations with you because we are not right, everybody.
No.
We are not right. We're questioning. And as we keep questioning this, I'm finding all the time I don't necessarily believe what I've said. Because I'm going, hang on a minute. Let me go through that. And I'm very good stroke bad at this. I'll quite often say something and the other person goes, hang on. And I'll go, no, you're right.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating, actually. Because
I find the whole flights thing super frustrating just because... little saintly me, lucky me, I haven't been on an aeroplane in 23 years or something, 22 years. Partly, to be truthful, because I couldn't afford to go on an aeroplane, but also because, you know, that's the single biggest thing that we can do, apparently. Mm. If we want to reduce our carbon impact on our planet, don't get on an aeroplane. Mm. Or actually, I believe the official advice is reduce your flights.
Yeah.
But I know bloody fine that despite the fact that I've banged on about this for the intervening 23 odd years, if one of my children moved to Cyprus, you'd be fucking bet I'd get on an aeroplane. Yeah.
Okay, I've got a small solution to offer people who are getting on aeroplanes. Use the time on the aeroplane to bless the country you are flying over. Find out the name of the goddess of the place that you're going. I never go to Cyprus without blessing Aphrodite, who is the goddess of Cyprus. I ask her permission to visit. I bless her. I speak with her. I thank her. And wherever I go in the world, I speak to the land there. So maybe if we did that, it might help.
Oh, it would definitely help. Absolutely. It's beautiful and categorically definitely will help.
Yeah. We've got to close because we're on 40 minutes at the moment. May I do one very, very quick? You know I'm a Kabbalist. That's a system that was based in the Jewish faith for a long, long time. When I was first starting to teach Kabbalah, I organised a holiday in Israel for people. It was a sort of working pilgrimage holiday. And the week before we left, President Sadat died. I think it was president, I'm sorry. Anyway, a good man died. I can't remember it so long ago, but he was generally thought to be a good man hoping for peace. And it was his funeral and they were expecting violence. And we were actually flying over Jerusalem at the point of the funeral. So I just said to everybody, we pray. On this trip, we pray for peace for this land that we're going to. You know, and again, it sounds like I'm virtue signaling. I'm trying not to. I'm sorry. But please, if you're traveling to somewhere new, bless it.
Yeah,
greet
totally.
It. Allow it to know that you're sacred and that you love it, because that's got to do something.
It knows you're sacred. The question is, do you know it is?
Oh, I might dispute that one in another talk. Sometimes I wonder if it does know we're sacred. Well, it knows we're sacred, but our intentions may not be.
Indeed. Anyway, we must shut up if we've already been for 40 minutes.
We must shut up. Oh, thank you, Susie. It's
thank you.
Lovely.